Dixieland. Glory, glory, hallelujah.
Welcome back to the Jeff Porch Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Wednesday morning, 251-343-0106. Text me. I touched a nerve with Amtrak, but we'll continue that discussion later on in the program. Still to come on the program, Joey Clark from up Montgomery Way, News Talk 93.1, our Wednesday regular. And then in that 11 o'clock hour, you want to stay tuned. Scott Stedhagen, who's the House Majority Leader here in Alabama, and his Mississippi counterpart, Manly Martin, I think from Moss Point, going to join us. A baseball game, or softball game, excuse me, in Jackson. They're going to come on and talk a little bit about that in the 11 o'clock hour, so please stay tuned for that. But joining us now, speaking of Montgomery bigwigs, always a pleasure to talk to my friend, State Senator Will Barfoot. Senator, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I appreciate the kind words. I don't know about big wig. Big, yes, and my hair is turning gray, but I don't know about the big wig combined together. So
that's just all that wisdom you are imparting upon the folks inside the State House. Am I right?
Well, that's up for debate, I guess.
Well, let's start here before we get into what I want to get you on about, but. Session wrap up. I know it was overshadowed by gambling, but for the most part, everything else seemed to go pretty decent.
Yeah, you know, very productive session. You know, especially given the fog of gambling that seems to, you know, hang over each session. You know, the ballot harvesting bill that Senator Gudger had, I was fortunate to get passed, along certainly with Representative Oliver, the anti-divisive concepts bill. You know, we had the CHOOSE Act, which is a seismic change in the way education is done. The parents get an opportunity to make an informed decision and take their tax money to use it in a different school system direct to educate their kids. You know, certainly the cap on property tax increases. I mean, all huge things in and of themselves. So I think very productive session in spite of the fog of gambling.
Well, and I ask every lawmaker, I mean, are we done with gambling for a while, or do you think it's going to come back again next year?
Well, I don't know that. I mean, listen, the roll of the dice, pardon the pun, tells me that it's going to be back as often as the folks who are advocating for gambling, if they think there's an opportunity. I mean, you know, I've been in the Senate for 6 years, and every year there's been some discussion, some years bills, and some years they've progressed further than other sessions. So, you know, whether it's next year that a bill's filed, you know, who knows, we'll see. But there'll certainly be discussion even if it's not filed, so.
Yeah, and your colleague Senator Gavan up in Huntsville is kind of posed it like this: like, if it doesn't have a majority of Republicans in your Senate caucus, then it wouldn't get to the floor. And he's not sure about the math right now. I mean, obviously things can change, and there's a lot of different moving parts and pieces. But until that's what's got to improve, right? You got to get a majority of your colleagues.
I think that is a wise statement. It's wise policy. It seems to me that is a path to get a lottery and enforcement type bill through both chambers, and we'll see what happens. Most of the folks out there who, if there's a discussion, and you know, listen, very rarely do I get people that stop me on the street or in the courthouse or whatever saying, you know, when are we going to get casinos? When are we going to get, all these other types of sports betting and stuff? Occasionally I will have somebody, are we ever going to get the lottery? So, you know, but so I think people, if you said, hey, what do you want out of those three? The majority of people say would like at least an opportunity to vote on the lottery. And so far we've been unable to give them that ability. And we'll see what happens next session and the session after. And it's probably like a drip of water, you know, it over time it starts to erode things, and we'll see where we land.
Senator, let's talk about the bill you and Representative Ingram are kind of designing or got filed into works here, and what it would do as far as police protection in Alabama. I guess we need to start at your home base there in Montgomery, that kind of a lackluster situation, putting it mildly, with the city of Montgomery there. And it's not necessarily crime per se, but just the police agency and what it can and can't and is able to achieve based on staffing and problems like that. I got to assume the inspiration for this, you're hearing from constituents, hey, do something about this. But kind of walk us through the problem and what looks like is going to have to be a solution from the state.
Sure. Well, you know, I think, first of all, it is not a problem that only Montgomery faces, is not a problem that only the state of Alabama faces. Fortunately, it's a nationwide problem. We've lost respect for law enforcement officers. We've seen them vilified in the news media and social media, that anytime something happens, everybody has their phones out there videotaping police officers who are trying to do their job. And so, you know, this is the fact that men and women get up every day and face the prospect of being injured or killed by someone while they're doing their job. That's nothing new. That's been there for a long time. My daddy retired from Montgomery Police Department in 1981 or either 82. Had an uncle that was a policeman in Montgomery and two uncles that were troopers. Those things existed as far back as there's been law enforcement. But what you have seen is a seismic change of what the public thinks of law enforcement, and that's in no small part due to social media and the liberal media that has just been hammering on law enforcement folks. So when you combine those two, you see not only you know the lack of respect for law enforcement, but and the fact that, you know, you might not come home once you put on the badge and you leave that day. Those two things combined with the fact that you might get sued or you might get prosecuted for doing your job. I mean, all of those things, in my opinion, and my discussion with several folks in the law enforcement community, have left, you know, meant that people have left, especially in inner cities, and they're going to find other jobs. You know, I wouldn't want my kids to be a police officer in a major metropolitan area, be it Montgomery or Birmingham or anywhere else throughout the country, because of all of those things. So what do you do? Well, when you have officers that are leaving police departments, for instance, and you're, you know, half staff, I think Montgomery, we budgeted somewhere around 490-500 spots in the MPD, and I think the last report I had from a week or so ago was we were at about 265 or 270, may have dropped down below that now. So what do you do? Well, first of all, you've got to have somebody in charge of that police department. I use an analogy like a George Patton has the ability, the knowledge, the know-how, and the will to be an effective law enforcement person, unhandcuffed by those in positions of authority or power over that police chief. So you got to have the will and the experience and the know-how to do your job and the ability. And that ability also includes, you know, You can have a General Patton who is handcuffed, but if he's fighting it at half staff, half force, then it's probably not going to be a winnable situation. So you've got to build back respect for that office. You've got to build back respect for the police department in general, and you do that from the top down, and it takes a while. I think eventually, if you have the right man or woman as your police chief, who meets those criteria, checks all those boxes, that you'll have men and women on the police department that stay there or come back and want to be a part of that department.
Well, let's talk about this. And this is something your counterpart Reed Ingram brought up. Look at the Montgomery County Sheriff's Office, put it side by side, the police in the city of Montgomery and the staffing situation there. And it's like, okay, maybe it's just a product of just not having people there. They want to go into law enforcement and be there. But you have a kind of a counterpart there at the county level that doesn't seem to have the same problems, the same morale problems. And so there's something amiss there among the city that needs to be fixed.
Yeah, I think, you know, part of that goes to leadership. You've got Sheriff Cunningham, who has respect from the community broadly. He is a law enforcement, law and order guy. Spent time at the Montgomery Police Department, significant amount of time. He surrounded himself with people who are not who are law and order folks, who understand what needs to be done and how you have to treat people. You know, make sure that you're not trampling on the Constitution. But you know, there are some things that the general public wouldn't like to hear. But in order to have an effective law enforcement force, I think you've got to mix and mingle with the bad guys, and they're not afraid to do that. So I think one of the big differences that when you compare the Montgomery County Sheriff's Office and the wonderful job that they're doing is from the leadership standpoint. I mean, again, from Montgomery, part of the Montgomery Police Department, the last two chiefs of police we've had here, you know, one was from Atlanta and one was from New Orleans. I think if you have somebody local that knows the personalities, knows the communities, has been a part of the community, that's also a very helpful piece of the puzzle.
Well, and, you know, let's talk about it, its implications statewide, what you're proposing to do. Now, the analogy I draw is sort of the Accountability Act and other the Montgomery public school system, right, was under kind of a state control for a little bit. I mean, is that a fair comparison that you just kind of come in, evaluate things the state would at some level, and then as soon as you can get out of the way and resume local control, that's sort of the idea.
It is. And that's, a fairly accurate comparison. You know, the thing about, you know, with law enforcement, again, I've never worn a badge, but family members, multiple of them have. This didn't happen overnight. And it's not just the leadership in Montgomery as an example. So it's going to take a while. I mean, you know, you can't have that George Patton type who is a law and order guy and put him as police chief and expect that 6 months later everybody's going to feel safe everywhere. It takes a while to turn that around, and it will take, given the right tools, whoever that individual is leading the Montgomery Police Department by example or for an example, you know, it'll take them a while. But ultimately, you know, we don't want to lose the local control. We just certain times that, you know, government's responsible to the people. They're responsible for their safety. I mean, that's one of the big areas that you know, responsibilities that governments have. And, you know, when people don't feel safe, you know, you lose people. When people don't think that their children are getting a good education, you lose people. And there are municipalities around the state where neither of those exist. So, you know, you come in, you try to right the ship, and hopefully thereafter, when the state has done what this legislation is intended to do, then you've put that municipality back on the right course.
Well, and I tell you what occurs to me, this is kind of a more of a broad question, Senator, is, I mean, there's something going on here. It's not just Montgomery. It's not even just Alabama. And I mean, culturally, we made a shift here, and I think that maybe it's the drug culture, or maybe it's just the way we are perceiving police, especially among certain age demographics and groups. But like, is there necessarily a government solution to the cultural problem? Is that, I mean, how much of it is just, let's say, mismanagement at a local level versus there's something else going on big picture wise?
Oh, no, there is no question. It is a big picture. And, you know, to your point, I think, you know, President Reagan said that 9 scariest words in the English language are I'm from the government and I'm here to help. I do believe that's the case. However, there are times when government has to get involved, when other government agencies aren't doing what they're supposed to do or don't have the ability to do what they need to do because of staffing. And, you know, certainly it is a cultural change. The lack of respect for law enforcement is, I've seen it in just my 20 years of practicing law. And so that's something that no matter how much ink or how much paper you have to write new laws, that doesn't change. But what we can do is we can take what's there and we can try to make it better. And how do you do that? You have a police force that is fully staffed, has the they're unhandcuffed, they have the knowledge, experience, and know-how and willingness to go out and do their job. And unfortunately we've lost that ability whenever you have almost a 50% reduction in force, by way of example here in Montgomery.
All right, real quick, last question. We just got a few minutes here, or very few minutes. But the prison situation, it's close to home there for you in Elmore County. It looks like it's coming along, but you still got another one to build in Escambia County. What do you perceive is going on there? Where do you think we are?
Well, you know, the cost of those prisons is, you know, probably going to be close to double what was anticipated. You know, it's one of those, you got to have the prisons. I hate that it's cost as much as it is. For far too long, we neglected the prisons. It was a pretty easy task to do, to neglect those. And now we find ourselves in a federal lawsuit with the federal courts looking down on us, and you know, the fear is always there that they'll come in and take over. Whether or not that actually would ever happen, who knows? I won't speculate on that. Hopefully we never get there. But certainly, you know, we've got to do better about being able to, you know, the argument is almost cyclical. Well, we've got these laws that are tough on crime. If we go and we arrest these folks, and if the courts, if found guilty, again, not trample on somebody's constitutional rights, but if found guilty, send them to prison for a long time. Well, that sounds great. And, you know, certain people need to be there for the rest of their lives, not just a long time. But when you don't have the place to house them, it breeds problems. You've got in a dormitory type setting, when you've got maybe one or two correctional officers guarding 150 folks, that breeds corruption. It breeds violence, and hopefully the when we get these two prisons built, we'll be able to sort out some of that anyway.
Senator, we always appreciate it. Thank you for coming on. Let's talk again real soon.
Hey, you've got a great lineup with Joy Clark today too. So Leader Steinhagen. So have a good time. I appreciate the opportunity to be on with you, Jeff.
Hey, thanks for making time for us. All right, guys, we got to get a break in here. We will return. This is the Jeff Porter Show on FM Talk 106.5.